Welcome to In the Studio, a 21st century perspective on history's greatest rock albums. I'm Redbeard, and today in the studio, we focus on that snapshot in time when the J. Geils Band had the number one selling album in America.
One of the things about the Geils Band that we really weren't that ambitious about having a zillion seller or something. We never really went into rock and roll to make money. We went into rock and roll maybe so we wouldn't have to work 9 to 5, but it wasn't sort of like to become zillionaires. Freeze frame! It was probably the happiest time in my life because we were doing tours where every place was sold out, and that's a performer's dream. And it was just great to feel sort of after all those years sort of finally somewhat legitimate in the sense that all the touring and all the one-nighters and all the, driving, in station wagons and just sleeping in funky hotels and, funky dressing rooms, and finally that there was a certain sense of respect coming back to the band.
This is Wolf of Google Mama 2 for Pete Wolf, the Duke of Dilemma, and you're in the studio with Freeze Frame.
There was a time prior to November 1981 when if you mentioned the name of the Boston group, the J. Geils Band, to practically anyone in the music business, their immediate response was, great live band, but they just can't seem to capture that in the recording studio. But after 10 albums, Freeze Frame changed that assessment of the J. Geils Band for namesake guitarist Jerome Geils, bass player Daniel Klein, harmonica player Magic Dick Salwitz, drummer Stephen Joe Blad, keyboard player songwriter Seth Justman, and Peter Blankfield, the J. Geils Band's kinetic lead singer who had changed his professional name to Peter Wolf when he did a brief stint as a Boston DJ. To get their album sales to match their great concert reputation, the J. Geils Band had tried just about everything. A bold new musical style with 1977's Monkey Island, a whole new record label, and a veteran outside producer on 1978's Sanctuary and 1980's Love Stinks. In an era when so many want to be famous rather than to put in the work and time to be excellent, it's insightful to hear lead singer Peter Wolf reveal what motivated the members of the J. Geils Band to persevere.
You know, one of the things about the Geils Band was we were concerned that there'd be audiences there. If we were going to play a place, we were concerned about selling it out, not for the money, because I don't think we really ever really addressed that aspect of it. We were just concerned about making sure that there was a desire for people to hear us and that it was going to be an event. And so we really weren't that concerned or that ambitious about having a zillion seller or something. We never really went into rock and roll to make money. We went into rock and roll maybe so we wouldn't have to work 9 to 5, but it wasn't sort of like to become zillionaires.
Side by side, love's gonna find you. Yes, it is. You love stinks. Love stinks.
Yes, the romantic ravings of lead singer Peter Wolfe and the number 18 chart position of 1980's Love Stinks was a good indication of where the J. Geils Band was headed sonically for their next studio effort. Lead singer Peter Wolfe emphasizes that the J. Geils Band could only afford to come off the road briefly to make their albums.
Our records really never sold that much, and so the band, you know, we would take so much time off from the road. We only really made money because of the contract on Atlantic. We only made money really primarily from live dates, and so if we took any time off to record, there was no income coming in. So the band at one point got about almost $500,000 in debt, and that was $500,000 in debt, and that was a lot of money back then. It's still a lot of money now, but I mean, you're talking about, you know, some guys that, you know, some of the guys had families, and, you know, talk about losing their car payments. And really, we didn't get out of financial strappings until the Freeze Frame album hit. And just around Love Stinks was the first time we had sort of money to reinvest in ourselves. That's why a lot of people, you know, we'd go and see these bands, you know, they play and they had all this big equipment, you know, on stage and these big stacks of Marshalls. So we decided one day, well, man, what we'll do is we'll take these amplifiers and we'll build these amplifier cases, you know. But inside we had like little twin reverbs, and because we never had the money. So it looked like we had these big, huge amps, but they were just like little twin reverbs or little, you know, Silvertone amps in them. And then every now and then when the spotlights would hit it, you could see that they were fake.
Friday night we danced.
was, I think, a riff that started on the B3 and Seth was messing with. And it's just this title, Freeze Frame, and ended up just sort of like throwing out all these sort of photographic terms and trying to embed it in a song. And it's basically, you know, that freeze frame moment sort of love at first sight, you know, freeze frame. You know, I could see it was, when you're freeze framed on somebody, that decisive moment.
Lead singer Peter Wolf discussing the inspiration behind the number 4 Billboard title song to the J. Geils Band's 1981 album, Freeze Frame, which by far had the most modern sound production of any previous J. Geils Band album, courtesy of keyboard player Seth Justman. Again, Peter Wolf in the studio.
And then I think Love Stinks was the first one that Seth sort of took over, because we decided, well, we don't need a producer. And then it was the kind of thing where, okay, let's relegate some responsibilities. And Seth really, I think, enjoyed the aspect of taking on the responsibility of sort of making sure the arrangements are sitting with Danny in the bass, or, you know, just getting the tempos down. And he was the most schooled of the musicians in the band. And so it was a natural progression for him. Seth worked real hard on the sound with Dave Thoner, and he was our engineer, and Dave went on to work with a lot of AC/DC stuff and John Cougar. And, you know, there was a lot of thought put into the sound production and trying to keep it clean and use the different speeds. And Seth and Dave worked real hard, and, you know, we all did, in sort of addressing the dynamics. But, I mean, Seth really went above and beyond, and I think out of the studio albums, I would say for the Geils Band, Freeze Frame was the most successful, and I think it was also the most laborious in addressing that aspect of it. Plus, the studio to me was like, I would get nervous if I hung around. There's too much machinery. I mean, plus they wouldn't let me touch the board, because, you know, I'd start sitting down there and say, well, I would try a little bit of this. And it's, no, Wolf, get away. Because, you know, I couldn't drive a car even then, because, I mean, me and machinery just did not get along.
Yeah.
great harmonica solo from Magic Dick on the Lickin' Stick, co-written by singer Peter Wolfe and keyboard player Seth Justman. That's the J. Geils Band with Rage in the Cage. Next, Peter Wolfe laments the reemergence of the single as the predominant musical vehicle. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter, and visit inthestudio.net for exclusive interviews and live performances. I'm Redbeard, in the studio with Peter Wolfe for the anniversary of the J. Geils Band's biggest album, Freeze Frame.
Welcome back to the studio. I'm Pete Wolfe, and I'm here with Redbeard, and we're taking it to it and getting right through. If it's in you, it's got to come out, because that's what rock and roll is all about.
Thank you, Pedro. It's the anniversary of the J. Geils Band's most popular album, Freeze Frame. Peter Wolfe notes that the hit single, which dominated the record and radio business until the mid-1970s, has reemerged in the 21st century, surprisingly, as the predominant method of musical consumption.
It wasn't like today, where if you don't have a single, you can just stay home. And that's how bad it is today, because it's gotten even far worse today, because even, you know, your entire FM band, most of it, not all of it, but most stations are really what we call CHR, contemporary hit radio. You know, it's like if you hear a new Stones album, you're only hearing the single. I mean, so if someone was to have released Sticky Fingers today, you would only hear Brown Sugar. You wouldn't hear Wild Horses unless it was a single, or you wouldn't hear Moonlight Mile unless it was a single. It just, you know, there might be one or two songs deep. But in those days, you know, you'd play anything you wanted, and you heard entire albums, and people bought albums. They weren't buying just singles. They were buying records, and they weren't buying just the album, but just the music. But the music represented a certain sensibility, because the band had a certain image or a certain lifestyle or a certain attitude. When you'd go see these bands, be it Traffic or be it The Who, there was a certain sensibility or credibility that you believed in. And it's so funny to see many of these same people, as rock and roll sort of marries commercial Madison Avenue. You know, many of these people have embraced using rock and roll to sell, you know, soda pop and hamburgers. And maybe because I come from an older generation, it still kind of doesn't sit well with me. And it's still sort of, I feel disheartened by it, seeing that kind of thing happen. It's not that I don't trust it. I mean, it's obvious that, you know, there's money to be made. It just, to me, it seems that shouldn't be the intention of what a rock and roll song should be. It shouldn't be allowed to be exploited in that manner. And there's something that's taken away when it happens. I think I'm either fortunately or unfortunately a minority, because most people really don't care, and it doesn't seem to bother them. You know, if a song that they like is, you know, shows up on a, you know, a soda pop ad, you know, it seems to be well accepted.
We met in a bar out on Chesapeake Bay, with her white patent boots and her blouse of red lamé, a tabletop dancer. Yeah. had flown. There were guys she could number, but none had she known. And she never had dreamed, so they never came true.
Singer Peter Wolf gives us the true story behind the Jay Giles Band song from Freeze Frame called Angel in Blue.
Angel in Blue is one of Seth's songs, but it had its basis with what I call the Lady in White. And she was a lady friend that I knew out in California. And I know she was a friend of Seth's brother also. And she was a woman that sort of ended up working in these like dance places and topless places, and she was quite a character. And she you know, came on sort of real tough, but you know, sort of as the Dylan song says, she broke like a baby child, like a little girl. And I think she was the biographical thread that got into Angel in Blue.
I saw the Jay Giles Band blow your face out opening ahead of the Rolling Stones in Cleveland Stadium in 1974, and it was at one of those stops on that tour that Peter Wolf met Academy Award-winning actress Faye Dunaway, the star of the films Bonnie and Clyde, Chinatown, and Network, three of my favorites. Wolf married the movie star, and as you could imagine, the gossip columns had a field day.
It was one of those things where being married to someone that was also in the public eye and a performer and stuff, we just started from day one not to make it one of those kind of public kind of marriages that were going to you know, do all this sort of public PR and all that Barbara Walters stuff. And I married the person because I loved her, and she was a real big fan of music and of rock and roll. And she would always come to shows and just sort of hang out and hang in with the crew and sit around and drive all night with us. So it was pretty easy. I mean, it was not really, there was no complications. The difficulties, you know, came when the band would be touring night after night, and she'd be working in some other part of the country or other part of the world and trying to keep it all together. I think ultimately that took its toll. And, you know, plus I was very young, and, you know, we both were and still are good friends. But I don't think we let it, we're just two people trying to get by.
The modern nightclub themes of several of the songs on Freeze Frame belie the pastoral setting in which they were recorded, according to Peter Wolf.
We cut Freeze Frame out at a place called Longview Farm. And what was good about that, it was like a real working dairy farm in North Brookfield, Massachusetts. And what was great about it was that the whole band could stay out there and sleep out there and eat out there, and we could just keep working on the record. And so we'd bring our whole road crew out with us, and, you know, everyone would bunk out, and we would be able to party up at night and work in the studio all day. And it was just a real way of us getting away from the craziness of touring and just being out in this wilderness, sort of. It drove me a little nuts because I like to sit around clubs and bar rooms and stuff, so at night I would have to drive miles and miles and miles to get to some honky-tonk place to sort of relax. But we ended up making Sanctuary, Love Stinks, and Freeze Frame at this farm that was a converted farm that became a studio. And it was a unique place to sort of be, especially for these wild urban guys like the Jay Giles Band to be stuck out there in the country.
Back.
recorded while Elsie the cow grazed nearby, Flamethrower would soon flood the dance floors upon release in November 1981. Still to come, Peter Wolf tells the true story behind the J. Geils Band's biggest hit, Centerfold. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter, and check out online rock interviews and live performances at inthestudio.net. I'm Redbeard, with Peter Wolf in the studio for the J. Geils Band's Freeze Frame.
I mean, like, I could see your hiney. It's nice and shiny. Don't try to hide it, because you know I'll bite it. Ow! This is Wolf of Goofa Mama 2 for Pete Wolf, the Duke of Dilemma, and you're in the studio with Freeze Frame.
And you expect me to follow that? Thanks, Pete. I'm Redbeard, and after 10 albums and less than a decade and countless days and nights of touring, the J. Geils Band's perseverance paid off big time with a Seth Justman song from the Freeze Frame album called Centerfold. Here's lead singer Peter Wolf.
None of us thought of it as a single. Matter of fact, the first single from Freeze Frame was going to be Angel in Blue. That was, I know, the song that Seth really wanted. I wanted Freeze Frame. And the record company figured, well, let's go with Angel in Blue. And we were making a video. We're on the video stage cutting Angel in Blue. And got a call from the president of the record company saying, hey, Pete, what you doing? I said, well, we're making the video. He said, for what song now? I said, you know, single, Angel in Blue. He goes, well, we're thinking of maybe changing singles. I said, but Jim, we're doing Angel in Blue. He said, well, why don't you just finish it up and get started on Centerfold. I said, Centerfold? He goes, yeah, we just got a feeling that Centerfold would be the best one for the first single. I said, are you sure? He said, you know, Centerfold's kind of, you know, it's fun, but, you know, you think it'll be a single? He said, yeah, I think it would be. And the rest, as they say, is history.
The song about the homeroom angel is a centerfold, was the perfect balance of naughty and nice in late 1981, and millions of people who didn't know the difference between a G string and a G chord were buying their first J. Geils Band album after 10 previous releases. It was a strange situation for the band to process, according to lead singer Peter Wolf.
We sort of became like an overnight success to a lot of people. All of a sudden there was like 8 times the amount of Geils fans. And it happened pretty quick. And I remember we were touring Europe with the Rolling Stones when Centerfold was sort of going up the charts in the States. And when we came back, we would start playing, you know, these arenas, and we just have to start adding on more shows because it just, the audiences just started getting bigger and bigger. And what was interesting too was that, you know, it was at a time when for so long, disco music was sort of controlling the pop charts, and rock and roll bands were just starting to sort of become, you know, sort of allowed to get back on the charts. And then there was this newfangled thing called MTV starting up. And then lo and behold, more and more rock and roll started getting onto the charts. MTV started becoming more popular. And MTV and the Geils Band embraced each other at the same time. And it just had this dramatic effect. And the Geils Band sort of rode that first crest when it all was coming into being, when rock and roll was sort of regaining its strength on the charts, and bands were going out and touring again, because for so long disco music, you know, people really didn't tour. They toured to tapes or background music, and it was a long period and a long time before rock and roll dominated the charts again. And I think Freeze Frame was the first major rock album to sort of get back into the charts. It was probably the happiest time in my life, because, you know, being the front guy and, you know, the lead guy out there on stage, after all these years, walking out to an audience that was so psyched, they almost transcended us, you know. And where we play, we were doing tours where every place was sold out, and that's a performer's dream. And I wanted to go on to like Australia and Japan and just keep going, because it was just so exciting that after all these years to sort of get in front of an audience that, you know, was growing. And, you know, a lot of the audiences came because they were seeing the videos and they had no idea the spectacle they were about to see. So there was a great excitement. Plus, it was really great at the end of the night knowing that we had guilized, you know, 20,000 or 15,000 or, you know, whatever the numbers might be. For me, that was just, you know, a really exciting period. And it was just great to feel sort of after all those years, sort of finally somewhat legitimate, in the sense that all the touring and all the one-nighters and all the, you know, driving, you know, in station wagons and just sleeping in funky hotels and, you know, funky dressing rooms, and finally that there was a certain sense of respect coming back to the band. And when it came, it was like somebody, for me, saying, you know, walking into a room and all of a sudden the lights go on and surprise, and everybody's there. And it's just, it was an incredible feeling.
That feeling continued for another 2 years. But after 17 years together with the exact same members who started, Peter Wolf left the J. Geils Band to make what has become a highly regarded, if not frequent, string of critically acclaimed solo albums.
In a lot of bands, there are what you call key members. In the Stones, you have Mick Jagger and Keith Richards. In the Eagles, you had Glenn Frey and Don Henley. In the Beatles, you had Lennon, you had McCartney. And in the Geils Band, it was Seth Justman and myself. Like in a marriage or in a relationship, when there's a problem between the key members, it either, you know, can get resolved or it gets into a dissonant chord or disharmony. And the relationship between Seth and myself just really, you know, disintegrated. And I guess a lot of it had to do with he felt that he really wanted to write on his own, and he was, you know, coming up with some really good stuff. And I enjoyed collaborating, which, you know, I did, and I came up with a bunch of things and some songs, things like called Lights Out and stuff like that. And he was, you know, involved in the production. He just felt that, you know, that material might not be really suited for Giles, and it just got into a very strange sense of, well, who's, I mean, what is Giles? And I mean, what do you mean? And just who is going to decide, you know, the material? And I guess he felt, and the rest of the guys felt, it would be best if they moved on as a quintet, and maybe I just ventured off as a soloist. You know, as I say, I've proceeded in my solo career because I love rock and roll so much. It's really the only choice I had. And I've tried to do it with integrity and dignity and with the same, you know, intensity that I gave to the Giles Band. But there are 17 and a half years of my life that's embedded on that vinyl and on those records. And the vast majority, I mean, most of all the memories, you know, are really very enjoyable ones.
Time.
On the J. Giles Band's anniversary of their number one selling album, Freeze Frame, I'm Redbeard in the studio. I'll be back after this. This is Redbeard in the studio, thanking my buddy Peter Wolf. In the Studio is written and produced by yours truly, Redbeard, for Bearded Fish Productions. Copyright 2016, all rights reserved. Transcription, Jane Carpenter Brunet. Theme song by Andy Timmons. Follow In the Studio on Facebook, at Redbeard Rocks on Twitter, and online at inthestudio.net.